Hey everybody, we're here with Isaac Keys, NFL player, actor, producer, everything else under the sun. We can't wait to talk to him.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Hey. You pulled that song out, huh?
Yeah. Had to. You guys, this is so exciting. We have Isaac Keys here, who is from the new Epics series.
Yeah.
Get Shorty. He's Ed on the series. It's so much fun. We're so excited to have you here.
Man, I'm so excited to be here. Yes, Get Shorty is on Epics. It just premiered August 13th, and it'll be going on 10 episodes. So we got 9 more. Tune in.
So exciting. And you're fresh off the plane from Puerto Rico.
Fresh off the plane. Puerto Rico.
Yes.
I'm down there shooting The Oath.
With 50 Cent, right?
Yeah, 50 Cent Production Company. We have some amazing cast. I'm not going to reveal all those right now because I have to keep some secrets.
Oh, some secrets.
But amazing cast. And I'm telling you, I just came off the plane and our last scene we shot was fire.
Really?
Yes. And they had me doing a lot of different things and I can't wait to see it on camera.
I am so excited. And there's a few other projects you're signed on with for 50 Cent's production, right?
Not as of yet, but from in your mouth to God's ears.
Got you. Got you. Okay, so I kind of want to break it down. You were an NFL player, but I kind of want to go back even before that.
Wow. Yeah.
You were born and raised in St. Louis.
Yeah, I was. Born and raised in St. Louis, Missouri. Shout out to everybody in St. Louis. Hazel Central High School. Yeah, Florissant, North County. You know, everybody got to get those shout-outs to all the different places.
Do it.
But
shout-out
to everybody in St. Louis, man. That's where it all started.
Right. And what did that teach you kind of about, you know, grinding, hustling when you came out here?
Well, the grind and the hustle definitely was embedded in me, you know, just growing up and just in different ways. But it started definitely with my parents. My parents instilled in me, you got to work harder than everybody else. Do twice as more. And even then, it may not be enough. So you need to stand out but with your work ethic. So I've always understood that. And then I think that just kind of translated over into my life, my sports, and even in school, in my education. I just kind of always kept that in the back of my head that I had to do better.
Yeah. Well, that reminds me because he is a motivational speaker as well. And I was watching one of your speeches and you talked about, you know, if you're doing the same thing that everybody else is doing, your results are going to be the same as everybody else.
Yes.
And so you kind of have to do more, right? So how have you done more over the years?
More over the years, I think is more about, you know, whatever the craft may be.
Right.
So if it started off with, you know, in football, if it started off in that, when practice was over, I would stay after practice and I would do some of the things that I felt like I didn't do well in practice. Going into practice, I would find out something that I wanted to become better at, and then that's what I would, that was my goal. So it started out at early age, was starting to set goals. And that was, I didn't understand it all the time, especially my father trying to tell me it hit more later. But that even translated over to school. When I go back and I talk to these kids, you know, they're all excited about different things outside of school. But if they can put that same energy into their books, something that they don't like, you know, or not excited about, if they can find a way to put the energy, change their mind state to say, I want to be better in school, because it all starts with a mind state.
Right.
If you're going to say, oh, it's going to be, I'm going to have a bad day today, then what are you going to have?
Right.
You're going to have a bad day. But if you're going to say, you know what, today is going to be awesome, it's going to be great, and I'm going to conquer the world, most likely you're going to overcome some things, you know? So it really starts with that.
I love that. And how did that help you get into the NFL?
That and the stars and the moon aligned and the graces of God. That's how I got to the NFL. I walked on to one school, University of North Alabama. I realized I didn't really care for that school as much in the aspect of feeling the growth for me.
Okay.
School's awesome, but this is growth for me. So I ended up transferring to and end up in Morehouse College. I'm rapping today. I was feeling inspirational.
Rapping.
Yeah, everybody's going back to school today, and I want to represent Morehouse College, my football alumni, and everybody went to that school. So I walked on there, and it's just still that ability to say, this is what I want. I want to play football. I want to get an education. So I fought through all the adversity from them telling me I couldn't play that first season to them telling me when I came out that, no, you need to come out when school starts, which I know put me behind, and I stuck with it instead. I just didn't listen to them, and I stayed there and flew up under the radar for spring football and ended up coming out as a 3-year starter there, battling a lot of things, injuries and everything else, but Luckily, I ended up getting a shot as a free agent to the Minnesota Vikings.
And that's amazing.
Yeah, and it's a lot more in tune. I mean, it's a lot of details that go into it, but this show had to last for a week.
Well, I want to talk about the call when you called your mom and told her, you know, I'm going to be a free agent for the Vikings. What was that like for everybody?
Yeah, well, to take it back, you know, my parents were very big on the education aspect. They didn't know how well I necessarily was doing in football. Mm-hmm. They would come down to Atlanta from St. Louis and catch a few games, and they're like, wow, okay, you're really good. But they didn't see the NFL. They saw that graduation, that, you know, degree, those things. So eventually when, the process started, pro day, I got picked late after the draft, not as a free agent right away. They picked me up a month later. So Minnesota called me. And just taking you back a little further, give you a background. Minnesota called me. It's like, hey, you can pack a big bag or a small bag depending on how good you think you are. And I'm like, wait a minute. I said, well, coach, I'm packing the biggest bag that I have. and I'll be there. Did the workout. Denny Green, without Denny Green, rest in peace, I wouldn't have had a career. And so he walked out there and he said, hey, son, we want to sign you to a free agent contract. I'm in the locker room. I'm looking at Chris Carter, Randy Moss, Jake Reed, Dante Culpepper, Robert Griffin. I'm seeing all these names in the locker room, and I'm just ecstatic. Like, I was in awe. By the time he took me back to the hotel room, I called my parents, and I said, Mom, have Dad pick the phone up, too. What? Mom, have Dad pick up the phone, too. Oh, okay. And so that was a whole process in itself. So, to get both your parents on the phone right at the same time. So I said, well, I'm in Minnesota, and they just offered me a contract as a free agent. And at that point, it was a silent pause, and then it was an emotional tears started flowing, then laughter started to happen. And it was just like, hey, let's get out here and go get what you can. Go do what you can do. And that's how it all started.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And so then over the years, you played for a few different teams.
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
Yeah, call me a journeyman.
I like that.
Right. That's not always good. But yes, I played for a few different teams. From there, I battled a couple of injuries in Minnesota.
Okay.
Which then led me to get released into my second year. Waited it out, man. Like, people see a lot of this football thing. They see a lot of, the glitz and glamour.
The
notoriety of the players that are all on TV. But the roster is filled with 53 active roster. Then there's, I think it's 10 now practice squad players.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at that, there's a lot more players on that team that are grinding it out, and the transition and turnover rate is so high. The NFL stands for not for long. Average career is 2 to 3 to 4 years, I think it is.
Right.
So, so just trying to make that team every year as being an unknown player is hard in itself, and that's a feat when you are able to make it,
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so, battled a couple of injuries in Minnesota, then went to Green Bay. I went to NFL Europe for a while, Green Bay. Then I latched back on with my guy, Denny Green, in Arizona, and I stayed there for 3 more years.
That's so amazing. That's it's really cool and inspirational story. And, talking about the NFL, kind of one of the hot-button issues right now is these concussions. I know you were a linebacker, so those guys are getting hit.
Right.
So is that anything you ever experienced?
Of course. Unfortunately, it's part of the game.
Right.
Football is not a game that you can play if your heart isn't in it.
Exactly.
It will tell on you every time. So when you go out there and they say play hard, they're seriously meaning play hard. I grew up with the mentality of that I'm going to hit you so hard that you're not going to want to run my way again.
Right.
But not trying to hurt you, but that's just the way that I had to play the game.
Mm-hmm.
And then being the type of player where I'm always trying to make the team, there was no take a break or let's make a deal type of thing. Like, I always had to play as hard as I possibly could, whether it's in practice or in the game, because I'm fighting for a job. Other guys are eating out there, and I wasn't eating the same way.
Right.
That was my mentality.
Right.
So with that being said, concussions do become part of it, but I believe that, now that we're acknowledging it and putting it on the table and everybody understands and knows about it, that we can start to do more things to help prevent them and to, further to make the game a little safer for our kids that are coming up.
Exactly. Yeah. And when you were in the league, it wasn't really emphasized as much, right?
No.
Nobody talked about it.
And I have to think about my NFL alumni from players before me. To my generation as well. From, I finished 2006, and I think the talk started to kind of happen like right around that time.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought it was just part of the game, and it was a tough moment. Like, well, get back out there. or shake your head, you know, get the cobwebs off what they said, and, you know, it's nothing. You'll be okay until you start saying, well, where do I line up on punt team?
Yeah.
And I remember doing that in college one time. I asked my team, I said, where do I line up on punt team? He said, man, you line up next to me. Oh, okay.
All right, I'm here. I think I'm here.
Right. So, yeah.
Wow. Well, that's crazy. Yeah. Well, do you ever, like, have anything now that you feel like you were affected by then?
You know, it's hard to say because you don't know who you're comparing it to.
Right.
You know, I mean, all the time, you know, your spouse or whoever going to be like, well, how'd you forget that? Sometimes like, oh, yeah, you know, it took a lot of hits, babe. That's why I forgot it.
Right. nice excuse.
But, I mean, when I sit back, I don't really pay attention to it until I really have to sit back and either talk about it, whether it's to a doctor or talk about it in an interview, and you realize, like, okay, well, am I reading scripts a lot more than the average person or the normal person? Or does it take me longer to get my lines? Or, you know, am I forgetting little things? And, you know, I have friends that we always sit down and we talk about it. Like, man, how you feeling? You know, playing football, how you feeling? What's going on? And I start watching some of my friends. It's like they're watching me, kind of monitoring each other.
Yeah, like, you good?
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, it's one of the things where you just kind of have to really sit down. And now they're starting a concussion with they had a big settlement. So now they're actually taking in players. And we have to do a baseline test to
see,
you know, where we are mentally and physically in that capacity. So, I mean, the process is started, and I'm just hoping it gets better as we continue to go. It's all about the growth.
Right, but it's tough. I mean, it's the game. It's the nature of the game. It's you got to change the game if you want to change the outcome, right?
You know, and that's a fine line because we love the game for what it how it's played.
Exactly.
Also what it does for ourselves and our families on a professional aspect.
Right.
But then when you look at it, football and sports are a way out for kids in a lot of communities.
Exactly.
And a lot of our underprivileged communities, like, that's their outlet. That's also keeping them off the streets. That's also keeping them from doing other things. And it provides a platform for kids learning how to be team members, how to work through adverse situations, how to work in their community.
Right,
and also
be
disciplined in an aspect that which we're all families and parents are trying to teach their kids already. So now in this platform of being in sports, it's teaching those kids as well.
Right.
So it's more of an installation, and that helps our society
right.
in the long run. So as we continue to grow in that aspect, we have to look at that, and we have to try to still keep this sports involved and keeping it strong. So
exactly.
that means putting more effort towards the safety of it.
Exactly. Totally. Yeah. Okay, so when was the moment that you kind of realized, I think I'm ready to do acting? were you involved in theater when you were growing up?
When I didn't have a job. That's when I did have a
let
job.
Me think
when
here.
Football stopped, I was like, what the hell am I getting ready to do?
Yeah.
I took one class in high school, and at that time I looked at it as an elective. I was like, senior year, or I think it was my junior year, that I was like, oh, I need an elective, you know?
Yeah.
So I saw acting, and I took it, and I didn't know what I was getting myself into. But we had what I saw then, it was a very inspirational acting teacher. And what she taught me, I found, I was like, okay, well, this is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Didn't think it would come back full circle after, you know, a football career and college and those things in nature. I didn't think it would come full circle. Towards the end of my football career, I had ran into a publicist, and I give him a shout out, Eddie Rodman, because without him at this time, I wouldn't have understood about entertainment aspect.
Mm-hmm.
I did some things with Essence. I did some things with a show called... what was it called? Off Season, where I was hosting the show, and I just started doing things in front of the camera.
Okay.
And people were like, hey, Isaac, you know, you kind of have a good look about yourself, and you're comfortable in front of the camera. I said, well, I thought everybody was. And with that being said, I just kind of latched on to it. I was in Phoenix at the time. They're like, you need to go to acting class. Like, do we have any acting classes in Phoenix?
Yeah.
Are there any there? And I really couldn't find any. So it was a big transitional period for me. Ended up making a move to L.A. And like everybody, I came out here with a dollar and a dream, really.
Right. You're doing a lot with that dollar and a dream, I'd say. Jeez. I mean.
Yeah, stick with it.
Oh, my gosh. Your credits. I mean, Jurassic World. You know, you've been on, I feel like, every show on TV.
That's how you got to do it, man. You got to try to get everywhere. Co-star.
Right.
Can I get a guest star, please? And you get a guest star. Then you guest star.
Yeah.
Then you just hoping for the big break. But
exactly.
I think the biggest thing is, man, when I talk to other actors, we have to have a support group.
Just
like football.
Yeah.
I try to have a support group as well. So when you have that group, you know, it's like, man, I'm getting ready to give up. I'm getting ready to move back home. It costs too much to live in L.A. I'm tired of waiting tables. I got a degree. And like that, it's like,
that's
how most of the actors are. But it's like, man, if you can stick with it and weather the storm, eventually it's going to come around. So it's always about finding things to fund the dream.
Exactly.
I worked as a security guard here. I worked as a personal trainer here before. And don't think I'm not too far from going back. Look, if I need to go back to in between money, because LA is expensive.
Right.
It is expensive. You have to pay your dues out here to make it work. But you know, when it starts to go, you know, all you want to do is work. As an actor, you just want to work. You want to do what you feel comfortable doing, and just go for it. And you just hope it eventually gets to the point where you're making a career out of it.
Right. Yeah. Well, what do you think being in the NFL and even your upbringing, what do you think that taught you, you know, to prepare you to be an actor?
I think it taught me an ethic of being able to take rejection, mm-hmm. be resilient, persevere through the hard times and things, and also just, I go back to the mind state, but trying to keep your mind in a place of being optimistic and being positive, because it's so much rejection from football to acting. Like, why did I choose another career?
Oh my gosh.
Like, the only difference is I'm not just getting hit in the head all the time, but just coming from the oath, but coming from shooting the oath, I just got hit in the head. Like, so it's like, it's not, but it comes from so much rejection that you have to instill in yourself a security about yourself,
right?
And then have a great support group. So I think all those things from football, growing up football and going to this, it's kind of prepared me for it. It's a weird way it prepared me for this next level. I used to pray for direction when I was playing football, like, because I was like, God, why can't I get this starting role, or why can't I be at this team? Why am I going somewhere else? I mean, at that point, I just wanted direction. Mm-hmm. When I look at it and you look back, it's like that journey and the things I went through kind of prepared me for being able to enter this realm of acting. And that's why I walk in the room. It's like I'm a little bit. I'm like, it's nothing you really can do to me. Like, either I'm gonna give you a good audition, a great audition, or I may suck today. But either way, I'm in the room and I'm gonna give you what I got.
Right.
And we'll go from there. Either you want me or you don't, but somebody else will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's an amazing outlook. I mean, that's hard to keep. No. Keep that mindset out here.
It took a lot to get to that mindset.
Yeah, that's awesome. So the first thing, I was it a play in St. Louis? Is that kind of your first dabble?
Yeah.
I went deep. Yeah, I didn't really research.
Wow, you got to give me the title of that play again. Something with love.
Oh, I know it.
Let's see. I did a lot of love plays. And,
yeah, you know, it was a love play.
Bring love back. But no, we had I did a couple plays here with Patricia Cuffey Jones. She's an amazing screenwriter. She's doing a lot of things now, going to TV. And then that play you're speaking of, St. Louis, was Joel P. King.
And yes, Issues, right?
Yeah, yeah. And he was an amazing playwright as well. And it had some great music in that play.
Uh-huh.
I really wish I could sing. He was like, can you sing? I was like, man,
I can pretend.
No, I can hold it. I do it. So he put me in a baritone role.
Okay.
So then I got the deep voice and I just played the background. And I just didn't, you know, I just didn't stand out. But it took everything in my heart not to just jump out in the front and just give them all I got. But
it's my moment.
Yeah, it's my moment. I'm going to say, my mama's in the audience. My great auntie's in. I got to sing something. But I didn't. I held my own. I just played my role.
Nice, nice. Okay, so that was your first taste at entertaining, really.
Uh-huh.
And then was it the reality show right after that?
Oh, man, there you go.
Oh, I got it. I got it right here.
Yeah, the reality show popped up. It was called the Donald Trump Ultimate Merger.
Right.
Yeah, did I say that? I think the Donald Trump part kind of screwed me up a little bit. The Donald Trump Ultimate Merger was the name of it. It was on TV1.
Mm-hmm.
Then they gradually moved it to just the Ultimate Merger.
Right.
So, yes, that was kind of the first time of being, like, on the camera in an aspect for us. You know, theater is an amazing form of acting because it's no cuts. There's no... Okay, cut, stop, let's redo this scene. You have to go into it and you have to commit to it and you have to roll with everything that goes along. That's why I have so much respect for theater actors and anybody involved in theater plays. Going to the Ultimate Merger, it was a reality show.
Right.
So I was just able to be me.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm most proud of is that, you know, some reality shows you have to go in and try to create this other character and then you have to be that character
the whole time,
life, because that's what people expect from you.
Mm-hmm.
The Ultimate Merger gave me a platform where I started, people could see me without my helmet. You know,
right,
they could see
right.
me without anything, you know, type of, you know, uniform or anything on.
Mm-hmm.
So it created a demographic for me that people kind of, you know, forcibly started to kind of like Isaac Keys a little bit.
Nice.
And it was a great show for us, you know, being out there messing, you know, great guys. Albie Shore was on the show, R&B singer. My boy Ray Lavender as well. It was on there. And it was some other guys. It was total 11 guys. And we ended up pursuing the Bachelorette of Omarosa.
Yes.
Omarosa. So, and going into the show, we didn't know who the Bachelorette was going to be. They actually put us and said it was kept it a surprise the whole time. We were upstairs in the suite that we were supposed to stay in. And then she entered the room. And from that point, we were just like, hey, I was like, game on.
Yeah.
Let's go. Let's see if I can be the last man standing.
Yeah. And what's funny is she now works for Donald Trump.
Yeah, she does.
She does. Yeah, interesting how that'll take you there. Reality TV to the White House.
It started off with Donald Trump, the merger. So, you know, they had a relationship there. And, you know, she's a very amazing woman. She is very calculated. And she, in the fact of that, you know, she kind of knows what she wants. She goes after it. Mm-hmm. And she's found a way to, you know, maintain herself in a great way.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and I have to ask, what was it like working with the Trump man?
The Trump man. you know, it really wasn't a working with the Trump man. You know, it was a name attached to a show at the time.
Got it.
I guess, you know, through whatever windows of opportunity they need to have a name attached to it as well.
Right.
So I met him once on the premiere, like the red carpet. They did it at Trump Towers in New York.
Okay.
They flew us out there. So I met him once. I shook my hand and I shook his hand. That's pretty much was it.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. You'd think he'd have more of a hands-on, but he was always so busy at that time. So.
Yeah, I guess so. I'm not sure what he was
doing. Okay. So from that was, are you glad you did that?
You know, I am.
Good.
I am glad I did because, it kind of broke the barrier. I mean, like, just far as, like, okay, it sparked that fire.
Right.
Okay, I could do this. I could be in front of the camera.
Exactly.
I could do these things. But, you know, and it's funny because after that, I got an audition through some via the people of TV One.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't ready. I thought I was ready for acting. I wasn't ready. Like,
what'd they have you do?
People don't understand.
Cry?
No. Just do the lines, sir. And people, when they say people are green, I was green. Green is the grass on the football field. It was like it's a journey. Like, the reason why you go through this journey as an actor is a reason.
Right.
Like, you got to trust the process, but you can't cheat it either.
No, you can't just walk in.
No, man, I'm trying to walk in and think, I'm dressed, I had the suit on, to go for the role. It's like a love interest role.
Uh-huh.
And I went in there, and the walls start closing on. Like, if you're not used to auditioning, you sit up there with these cast directors sitting in front of you, and they just look at you like,
yeah.
They just stare at you, and you're like, okay. So, okay, can I start over? You haven't even started. Like, can I start
line?
Over?
Line? Can somebody give me a line?
Line, please. And you know, and it is a journey. That's why those classes initially are important. You have to really submerge yourself into this craft and learn.
Right.
Some people may jump right into it, but, you know, eventually it's going to catch up with them.
Exactly.
You got to put the work in.
Right.
Put the work in.
So you did classes when you came out here?
Yes, I did classes. Yeah. And I just didn't do them soon enough before that audition.
Yeah. But,
no, I did classes.
Did they say anything to you in the audition?
I think what they told the person from TV1 is that, politely, I think they just said, what she told me was like, you know, yeah, you're just green right now. But I think there was a lot more probably being said behind the in that conversation.
I love that.
Yeah, so.
Well, at least you knew.
Thank you for the opportunity. Thank you very much.
See you guys later.
All right.
10 years, maybe.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, hopefully, you know, I'll see you again. I'm going to go to class right now, actually.
Yeah, I got to go. I'm late for class.
Totally, exactly what it was, but yeah. Man.
That's awesome. Okay, so that was your kind of first taste, and then you took classes.
Yeah.
And then you kind of dove right in.
No, I dove right in before I got, before I got the roles. I mean, it just was a continuous process. Man, I'm telling you, the thing about it, football is like, okay, you play Little League, you play high school, you play college. You may get a shot to play it professionally.
Right.
So it's a path.
Right.
When it comes into acting, there's no direct path.
Exactly.
So it's like a trial and error, you know, thing going on. Like, where you you know, where you go to class at, where you get your headshots at. I mean, you start out, you go pay this outrageous price for headshots, and you realize, I don't need to go over there to get headshots for $50 for one. You know, I can go over here, you know, to this other place. And so, or this class. So you don't know the management, whether, you know, your agent. Like, a lot of agents, when you first start, I need an agent. You're probably not going to be able to get an agent because they're going to tell you you're too green.
Right,
like
you're
not at that level. So you have to find at your whatever level you're on at that point.
Right.
Work with what you got. Build on there. Build to their resume. Build to the next part. And then eventually other people will come grab you. And I didn't understand that when I tried to talk to actors. Like, well, you know, you do the work. Go do this. And then actually, you know, an agent will find you. I was like, no, I'm going to find an agent.
Yeah.
Find me. Well, I ain't going to make it hard for them to find me. I'm going to find them.
I'm right here.
Exactly. So... So, you know, you have to do the work, and then the process, you have to continue to grow, and then your representation will grow with you as well, too.
Mm-hmm.
And then you try to put yourself in different rooms. You know,
right,
right. yourself, and then you have to start knowing your worth. A lot of times we know people think they know their worth a little too early.
Right.
You know, like, you know, so you have to, you know, you have to be honest with yourself and start realizing, okay, where am I at in my career? What changes can I make? And how can I evolve? Because it's your career.
Right.
It's your career. And all you're looking for is good advice. And you're going to get a lot of that, and it's not going to be so good. So you got to have a good filter with it as well. So from that point, I mean, that's the question. It's just I kept on just grinding out, and I get a little co-star role here, do a little role here. I mean, I've done little student films where they said they're going to send you your tape so you can put it on your wheel.
And
they never
sent
you the tape, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just it's a journey, man. You just got to stick with it and take your bruises, your lumps, and your smiles and your celebrations.
Right. It's tough. I know. Because the first few auditions, even I've been on, I'm like, oh, that's good. I'm cool. It's fine. I'm not going to be affected if I don't get a callback. And then you don't get a callback. You're like in the tub. Like, I don't know what I'm going to do tomorrow.
Right. The craziest thing is when you leave audition and you're still saying the lines. Like, you're like, I could have said it this way.
Man.
You look in the rearview mirror. You're like, so if you looked at me and I looked at you, it's like, man, dang, I missed the word. I missed Anne. I didn't get it. You know, like, something not going to call me
and
back.
And it's so not even about the, I mean, I don't know, but I feel like it's so not even about what you do in the room anymore. It's about, like, what you look like, what you, if you fit the role.
It's evolving. It's like that.
Right?
It's like how many likes, how many, you know, followers you have, those type of things. And sometimes it's not about your work. But,
right.
you know, what I've learned in my, you know, through some of the people that I know, actors and service mentors, is like, when you leave the room with audition, just throw the sides away.
Right.
It's over. All you could do was what you did in that room. But, you know, what you're accountable for is trying to give your best audition that you possibly can give.
Right.
And then talking to casting directors, they're like, look, sometimes you can go in there and have the best audition, kill it, be the best for the role. But the producer can come in and say, you know what? Her mouth reminds me of my ex-wife.
Right. Yeah.
We can't use her. You know, I don't need her. Who's next? Who else can we use? You know, like,
yeah.
I mean, there's so many intangibles.
Totally.
It's very subjective.
Totally.
You know, football, you can run a 4-3, you can have all these passes, they're going to give you a shot. This way, it's subjective. Like, I'm not feeling well today, and that person, they had cologne, didn't smell so good.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's all in good. So, you know, you just got to do what you can and then talk it up and go on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And I feel like now you're really, like, really hitting it hard. You know, you're in all of these upcoming projects, and, you know, this epics project was a big deal.
I'm really excited about this epics project.
Yeah.
I'm really excited about Get Shorty. The cast, man. I mean,
right.
Ray Romano and Chris O'Dowd, they get on set and we sit back and we just have jokes and it's just jokes going off each other. But then it's not, you know, you talk about Lydia Porter who plays Amara.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Goya Robles who plays Jago.
Yes.
I mean, we have all these different characters, you know, Meg Stevens to Sarah Styles to Lucy. It's like everybody on there, like, we became such a family.
Oh,
Carolyn Dodd,
awesome.
Who plays Emma, the girl. She,
uh-huh.
The first table read, when Carolyn was in there, she knew all, like, it was a table read. You know, everybody just kind of just got the script read. Somehow, Carolyn knows all her lines by heart already.
We really?
Like, how you know your lines already by
heart? Oh, that's so cute.
But she has a great support group with her. And,
uh-huh.
You know, but, and we filmed in Albuquerque.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, shout out to Albuquerque. And it's so many projects being filmed in Albuquerque. But I think that's what brought our cast closer together.
Because
we kind of going into this, we like everybody was trying to figure out their characters.
Right,
the writing was great. David Holmes does a great job of writing, and everybody he's worked with. Then the directors were great as well too. Adam mm-hmm. Couture did the first one. You had Adam Arkin. You had Dan Tyus. You had, and I know I'm missing a couple, but you'll see
yeah,
how they do
right,
it because
right.
they give their diversity to the show. But we became so close. Like we would go out and you know we'd go eat together. We'd go you know have drinks together. We'd just hang out. And we become close. And I'm just so excited about this show and the character I play in Ed. I'm really excited about it.
Yeah. So yeah. I feel like the first scene, you're like the first person I see. Just taking somebody
you know,
down.
We got to go with an impact. We got to enter the season with an impact.
And, yeah, right.
Yeah. Ed is a, you know, I was trying to figure out Ed when I first got the role.
Uh-huh.
And I sat down and talked to Dave. I said, I created this whole backstory. Like, yeah, Ed, he had to come from this and he went through this struggle internally.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, but I was trying to find Ed because Ed doesn't always have a lot of lines, but his presence is strong.
Right, exactly.
And his presence is strong, but then, you know, as the season goes on, Ed starts to kind of unveil a little bit. You know, you
yeah,
start seeing
absolutely.
A little personality, some, you know, some relationships he's kind of tagged into, you know, like, you know, where he, some sentiments, his thought process and, you know, his loyalty.
Right.
So it's, you know, it made it great because sometimes I'm in a role, I'm like, I want to do this with the character. It's like, no, Ed's simple. Ed doesn't do all that.
Yeah.
Ed just says it directly and then he divides his action.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, let's roll with it. Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, yeah, that's you definitely do a great Great job in that project.
I appreciate it.
I really love watching it. Also, I saw an interview or something with Chris O'Dowd who talked about, his quote was, that bluntness works in Hollywood because it's rarer. Do you think that's true?
I think so. I think it it also depends on who you are.
Right, exactly.
You know, the bluntness, I mean, you know, where you are in your career and who you are. But
right.
It is because, I mean, Hollywood gets the stigma of, oh, let's have lunch.
Yeah.
Oh,
right.
I'll call you. And it never really happens. You know,
right.
Like, or you're calling
so
them.
So sad.
Yeah.
You hear the line and you're like, dang, I know that's not going to happen now that you just said it.
You don't give me a Hollywood line.
See you
line.
Later. Yeah.
Like, go have lunch. You just ruined it for us right now. Like, oh,
now
man,
it's over. See you never.
Right. So,
yeah.
You know, and it's weird because people always say, oh, Hollywood. But Hollywood is built up of people from various places.
Everywhere, yeah.
It's like people come here and then they adapt this Hollywood personality.
Yeah.
Instead of holding on to, you know, who they were before.
Isn't that weird?
It's because, you know, you can't beat them, join them, I guess. You know,
I guess.
They got done with the let's go have lunch. So now they got to do the let's go have lunch to somebody else.
Yeah, right, right.
So, yeah, but I think bluntness comes in handy in a lot of different ways. Because you really, as an actor, I just want you to tell it to me straight.
Right.
Did I do a good job, or what can I do better?
Right.
Or that, did I get the role? No. Why didn't I get the role?
Right.
And that's what I was always missing going into, because there was no affirmation. There was no like, you know, hey, you know, you did a great job in the audition, but we're going to go with somebody else because.
Right.
It's like you did an audition, and then, like you said, you're waiting for the phone call that never comes. So it becomes an emotional roller coaster.
Yeah.
So that's where the bluntness comes in, where you will appreciate bluntness.
Mm-hmm.
But you also have to have bluntness instilled within you to know that, okay, well, they ain't called.
Right.
Okay, so what? Do we have anything else?
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
So, yeah, I think Chris did. I think he's spot on with that.
Yeah. And if you guys haven't seen Get Shorty yet, it's about kind of a hitman that's changing his career path, and he wants to be a writer or a producer in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, he takes his script, which wasn't even his script, gets on a studio lot, and talks to Ray Romano's character about pitching it, and long story short, it goes on from there.
Yeah.
But do you think that could actually happen? If someone's that bold?
I think, well, you know.
Minus the murder part, and like
minus
the crime.
Minus the
murders
and the blood and things of that nature. But I think there's a lot of truth in it. And I think that's where David Holmes came in. And also, I mean, we got to go back. You know, I mean, it comes from the book, from Get Shorty, all the way to the movie Get Shorty. And, you know, that fan base. And a lot of people love the book and the movie, and I don't think we did. I don't think Davey and the production team did a bad job of, you know, steering too far away from that. But I think they just kind of evolved it to give it this really big punch and impact.
Right.
So I think that there's a lot of things that people see, especially people that live in Hollywood, with the dialogue that they'll be like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. And it's like, it's that quirkiness to it with the drama, and it's gonna make you laugh. But then eventually, it's gonna start. You're gonna start loving and hating different characters. You're gonna start, you know, being involved emotionally. And I think that's what it's all about. And I think it's kind of, you got to pull those strings a little bit.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it very relative and real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and that's, yeah, that's the coolest part, is there's so many, like, little little sprinkles in there that you're like, oh, I could see that happening.
Yeah, there's a lot of different sprinkles.
Yeah, but it's really cool, and we're so excited to see the rest of it.
Thank you.
Okay, so I guess we could talk about kind of your upcoming stuff, what we can look forward to. So The Oath, I don't know how much you can say about it.
Well, I believe there's a little bit to say about it. They didn't give me a big NDA or non-disclosure agreement or whatnot before. And we started kind of posting, doing pictures on Instagram and things like that. People can see, you know, the Oath on Crackle, because it'd be on the Crackle Network.
Okay,
which is
cool.
a network like, and I don't know if I get in trouble, like Netflix or Hulu.
Got it, right.
Online network.
Yeah, that's happening now.
Yeah,
everybody's got their own network.
It's creating a big platform.
Yeah.
You know, and it's good because it gives more projects a place to go. So I play a character, G, and G is kind of the right-hand man to kind of a crime boss or, you know, of a affiliated gang called, his name is Neckbone.
So we
got Neckbone and we have G.
Got it.
And G, what I love about it and how timing works in this industry is that G is a intimidating character, I guess you could say.
Okay.
But he has this little esque of kind of a punk involved into him a little bit, too.
Oh, really?
And I say that meaning that, you know, like, he may come off intimidating, but G might not be the strongest, might not be the best fighter, he might not be those things like that.
Yeah.
So it what I loved about it, and I was telling the producer and the director on it, is that I come off playing an enforcer role. Mm-hmm. Most of the roles I play are kind of an enforcing or something of the nature. But now it takes me and it gives me a little more range to now to where I'm playing a character that has that in the presence. But at the same time, you know, I have to switch over to being able to let, you know, let somebody else manhandle me maybe a little bit or maybe, you know, put me in my place.
Whoa, I can't see that happening. Personally, everything I've seen you do, I can't see you getting manhandled by anybody.
Know, that's good acting. I'm not green anymore.
You're no longer green.
I'm no longer green anymore. But no, but that's what I love because I wanted range.
Right.
You know, I wanted a little range to be able to do. And it's like, you know, the timing coming right off of playing a great role with Ed on Get Shorty on a phenomenal show, coming over to another one mm-hmm. where now I get to play a little different range on it. And that's what I want to continue to show people. I want to be able to show the range. So, you know, people say typecasting. I just, you know, I'm okay with playing a role that I feel like makes sense.
Right.
And that allows me to be able to, you know, continue to grow as an actor and do good work. And fans, you know, continue to love and they can attach themselves to and continue to follow.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So what do you think about, we kind of touched on like all the networks popping up mm-hmm. and now everybody's kind of got their own channel, everybody's going to different spots. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's providing more opportunities for actors?
I think so. Before we were, you know, especially being a minority actor, we always looked at, well, are there roles for ethnic actors and things of that nature? So, you know, it was a big thing. But now, as you move on to it, we have so many amazing directors and writers out there that are just not being seen because there's not enough, you know, there's not enough slots on network TV.
Exactly.
You know, so there's not enough slots there. So now when we start bringing, you know, movies going straight to Netflix, series going straight to Netflix, you got Hulu picking up things, Amazon, and now you have Crackle with Oath and different production companies stepping up to the plate.
Mm-hmm.
I think this now is getting an opportunity for these writers and these producers step up, but now also the actors.
Right.
It's creating more roles.
Right.
What we have to do now is the big feat is, you know, is making sure everything is mandated and actors are taken care of through SAG union and things of that nature because, you know, it's big business.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
So, you know, it's big business and there's a lot of different parameters that play a part of it. But I think it does help. And I think, it just gives people more of more options.
Right, exactly.
Viewers all into everybody else is involved.
Yeah, and there's so many different niches. I feel like you can kind of watch whatever you want now.
You can, and wherever you want.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Whatever you want, wherever you want. That's the slogan. We'll keep that after Buzz.
Okay, so I kind of want to wrap it up with your quote from your motivational speaking. You said that everybody has a story to tell and you could inspire someone, but you have to share it.
You kind of have to share it.
So
yeah.
Do you feel like you're doing that?
I strongly feel that. I woke up today and I was feeling inspirational, in a sense. Mm-hmm. That's the reason why I wore my Morehouse t-shirt, because I wanted, you know, everybody's starting to go back to school. Kids are going back to school, and, you know, there was a picture that someone posted of Morehouse. Morehouse being an all-male school, it's all about promoting leadership and promoting, you know, the academic side to the athletic side, but grooming our men to be leaders in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a picture of everybody holding hands, for the orientation. And then they had the other picture was showing the things that happened in Charlottesville, Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like the difference where, you know, we can have unity or we can have this separation. One thing you talked about with football is that, and I say this all team sports, it's the mecca of seeing people come from all different walks of life, different places, all coming together with a common goal. And everybody's not going to like each other, but they respect one another to reach this common goal.
Mm-hmm.
I've said that in the sense that if you can get America and get more people to do that, whether it's in the school system, whether it's in any platform, but we can get people to just learn to, we're just working together.
Right.
It doesn't matter because you realize how much you're like the other person.
Right.
You realize what you have in common just by having a conversation.
Right.
But if you're not willing to have a conversation with the person, then the ignorance starts to set in and you've passed judgment and you've done all these other different things which require you to now develop these feelings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
right.
Your thoughts curate your feelings.
Yeah.
Your feelings curate your experience.
Exactly.
And, you know, you can have a good experience, you can have a bad experience, but it's really up to you, and it starts with your thinking. So if we can change the thinking to being more positive and to be more about love and to be more, you know, inspirational, just about those things, then we're going to change our thoughts and our experiences.
Exactly.
So, I mean, that's just kind of where I'm at right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that kind of reminds me of the tweet. Did you see Obama's most liked tweet?
Mm-hmm.
The Nelson Mandela quote?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was like chilling.
Chilling.
It was the most liked tweet.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you guys didn't see it, he was talking about the Nelson Mandela quote. And he said, you know, people aren't born not liking each other. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of a learned thing.
Yeah,
and so if people can learn to hate, then they can learn to love, and that's a lot easier. So
we can. It's everything about being the teachings. And it starts with us.
Right.
It starts with us.
Yeah.
And,
well, you're an awesome example for everybody, you know, from St. Louis to football people to everything. So I just, yeah, you're really great. So we appreciate you sharing your story.
Thank you.
Okay, where can we find you?
Well, you can find me. I keep everything simple. Everything's Isaac Keys. So, I mean, Instagram is Isaac Keys. Facebook is Isaac Keys. Twitter is Isaac Keys. And I got to do better. I got to do better with social media. So I need everybody to help me get better on my social media.
I'm sure you're great.
Yeah. I'm trying to. It's like I'm more of a person like, you know, I'm just like, well, why do they want to know that?
Right.
I'm just living in the moment.
I'm just eating mac and cheese.
And it's like people are forcing me to do more and more. Yeah. So I need everybody to tune in, follow me, inspire me to do more on the social media side. And I'll start giving you, I promise you, I'll start giving you more of the things that I have going on. And just try to make everything better. Why not?
Awesome,
It's so easy. We make it hard.
Right.
We make it real complicated. It's really easy.
Yeah,
it's
right.
It's really easy. So, yes, and thank you to you for having me.
Yeah, of course. We're so happy to have you.
AfterBuzz being a great, great platform and a place for people to tune in. And, you did a great interview.
Oh, thank you.
Well,
we're
time.
So happy to have
here.
You.
Well,
we appreciate you coming in.
Too.
You're more than welcome anytime you want to come in. When you're not in Puerto Rico.
Don't tell me that.
Please come hang out.
You're close to me. I'll come buzz on the door.
Buzz on in. Buzz right on in.
Buzz. I'll be in here.
Well, I'm Teague Pinko. You guys can find me at TeagueDP. And then we heard Isaac Keys. You can find him everywhere at Isaac Keys.
That's right. Get Shorty on Epic.
Get Shorty. Watch it now. We've got Ed. So exciting.
The Oath 2018.
Yes. Awesome. Thank you guys so much. We will talk to you later. Peace.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.